vomits black goo into the
microphone. I am a demon zombie. Welcome to Secondhand Film Critics, your favorite source for mildly pretentious, semi-uneducated, and highly unqualified opinions on spooky movies. Boo!
Yeah.
So we're talking about Jennifer's Body. Did you know
the movie, not like someone named Jennifer's Body?
Yes, the movie.
It's a movie. Yes.
The black goo was actually Hershey syrup, and then they did
color
CGI color as well. But they originally they just enhanced it with CGI. Most of the effects this movie were enhanced by CGI. But yeah, the goo that she vomited was Hershey's.
Wait, you're telling me that Megan Fox cannot fly?
You know,
are you kidding?
Allegedly, she cannot. But who's to say?
What a huge bummer. Zero stars.
Yes. So we're talking about Jennifer's Body, obviously. And this is not just any normal spooky episode. It's also a we've never seen, where we watch movies that we, in fact, have never seen. And so that's what this was. We both, despite enjoying somewhat for me and for you enjoying, you know, kind of the thriller, horror, comedy, slasher genre. It's surprising that neither of us had seen this.
Yeah,
but
definitely.
We got around to it in 2022, the year of our Lord and Savior, Hubie Halloween. What is Hubie's last name in real life?
Hubie, I don't know.
Hubie Dubois? It should be Hubie Doobie. But it's Hubie Dubois.
That's a
French
that's
king,
so fancy.
Maybe?
Timothy Chalamet ? This is also our first Halloween episode we've recorded on actual Halloween.
Damn. Crazy.
Because which shouldn't happen, because that means we're behind.
Did you do anything spooky today?
Not today. Yesterday I did. Today I was working basically all day.
Sure.
But you know,
unfortunate.
Yesterday I was in the mood, in the spirit. Yeah. I did tried to listen to a lot of music today
Pumpkin.
Least get some spookiness in there. Mostly the Dead Man's Bones soundtrack.
Okay, awesome.
I'm not gonna lie.
Love it.
Which it was a great vibe today.
I had my party on Saturday, and then today I watched a Hallmark Christmas movie. But it was about ghosts,
festive.
So I felt like it kind of fit the spirit a little bit. And then I passed out candy to trick-or-treaters. But what I did was I didn't want to go buy new candy because candy's so expensive right now. And so I just used some leftover candy from my party that I was like, should not be eating this. And it lasted a whole hour of trick-or-treating, which was surprising to me because it wasn't a whole lot of candy, and kids also tend to just grab fistfuls.
Right. Well, you were there, though, right? It's like, so you were monitoring.
I was, but they were still grabbing fistfuls.
Yeah,
I mean,
but
like,
if you weren't there, they would have been dumping that thing into their
bags. Yeah, I mean, I'm sitting there. I was actually working on the run of show while I was sitting there. So I had my computer in my lap. But I set the bowl on the porch steps, and they would come up and they would be like, trick or treat. And it was very cute.
Trick or treat.
And then they would, well, what's really funny is there's kids who would be like, trick or treat. And then they would like shove their hand in the bowl and grab like five pieces, which I don't care because I'm getting rid of it. So if they want the candy, doesn't matter to me.
First come, first serve.
But then there would be kids who were so sweet, and they would be like, hi, happy Halloween, trick or treat. And then they would look at the bowl and they would say, am I allowed to take more than one piece? And I would be like, yeah, take as many as you want, because they
that's
asked
a dangerous game.
They asked so nice, but most of the time they would only take like two or three. I was fine with that. Yeah, they were very cute.
Two or three is good.
I told you this story, but my favorite kid was, he came up with his little brother. The older brother was Ant-Man and the little brother was Batman. And he had on the mask and then like a suit that was like a puffy muscle suit that he had gotten from like Party City or something, I guess.
A staple of Halloween.
He had a beard drawn on his face that was like a bunch of black dots that looked like it was like marker or something all across his face. And his brother had to be like, say trick or treat, but he like didn't want to say trick or treat. And then when they were leaving, I let them take as much candy as they wanted. And then when they were leaving, the dad's like at the end of the driveway and he was like, make sure you say thank you. And so he turns around over his shoulder. Batman turns around and he's like, thank you. It was so funny. It was the funniest thing. Just because it was like, obviously he probably was too young to have seen any of the like Batman movies. So I'm sure the Batman, because he was probably like 5. So I'm sure the Batman movies that he's watched are like Lego Batman, Batman being in the Lego movie, stuff like that. And it sounded like he was trying to do like Will Arnett's like, I'm Batman.
Thank you.
It was so funny.
That's so funny. Let's go quick before you jump into Jennifer's body, our We've Never Seen. Let us go through some of our answers we got to our question of the week, which was from our Halloween Town episode, Halloween Town High. We talked a lot about things, decisions that were made in that movie that maybe we thought could have been better. And because of that, we asked the question, what movie do you wish you could rewrite? If you could go into the writer's room, into the booth, and just go in there and rip up the script and make it better. And we got we got answers that, one answer I was not expecting, but a lot of them, like some of the classics, so like Hunter said Rise of Skywalker, which is, yes.
We would also like to rewrite that movie. If I could write, this is going to be me clanging a gonging bell over and over and over again, because you've heard me say this a billion times. But if I could rewrite anything from Rise of Skywalker, besides, this may surprise people, because I feel like this is even above me making Finn and Poe be in a relationship, is I just think they need to rewrite C-3PO's. My dude, my robot guy, so dirty. And I just wish that could be rewritten. Like, if I could have anything in that movie be rewritten, it would be how they dealt with my boy.
C-3PO.
3PO.
Gosh darn video. They said just they believe to just accept what the film gives you and appreciate everything you don't like about it. That's definitely the healthy answer.
It is.
But you know, we're not healthy. But they also said Star Wars 7-9. So
valid.
You know, like maybe someone goes in there, tries to draw like a little bit of a connective line through each of the three films.
Sure.
But I feel like when we watched the movies
last
year, Last
Jedi's a masterpiece.
Last Jedi's great. And also 4, 5, 6 are not very coherent either. People act like the original trilogy is like real, this like perfectly aligned plan from the beginning. It's definitely not. Like if it's very messy. So I feel like I think you could rewrite 9 and it would be basically a good trilogy. It's really 9 where it kind of like goes off the rails.
Yeah, and I think there's some stuff that could probably be tweaked in Force Awakens as the beginning of the series. And like, I love Last Jedi. There may be a few things that I would tweak around in Last Jedi just to make things work more cohesively. Mm-hmm. Although it is a masterpiece and best Star Wars movie ever made.
Yeah, no cap.
And then our boy Zach Smith.
No, this is an invalid take.
He said
Zach
sky
Smith.
High, and I no. have to say, like Zach no. and I, buddy, I love you.
We go way
We're
back.
Normally on the same page, but this no. one, I opposite. I can't no. even fathom that you would think this, because
what would you even do? Like,
I don't
how
know.
Could you? What
it's
would you
so
even add?
Good. And like, we talk about Halloween Town High, and we've talked about some of these other ones, and I just feel like this is one of those, like, in that tier of movies, TV kids movies, that just is untouchable. It's too good to have someone rewriting it. I think this is a very poor take.
I would go back and make a sequel, because I think they really left a big franchise on the table. If this came out now, merchandise, the cinematic universe.
Well, now we know who we will not be inviting onto our childhood classic Sky High episode.
Sky High, yes.
Coming in a year, 2023 maybe.
We got to do Sky High. Sky High is a great movie.
Then Danny said, Batman versus Superman literally writes itself, yet they somehow messed it up. Did you ever see that one?
Yeah, I've seen it. I've seen the theatrical and the extended cut, actually. So you just call me a Snyderhead, I could say.
I don't know that I saw that one.
I would say it's probably not worth watching. The extended edition is better than the theatrical, because it makes more sense, but it's still very messy, and it's like it's trying to be like a Batman movie, but also a sequel to Man of Steel, but also a movie that introduces the Justice League, and it's just like doesn't really do any of the things very well.
Yeah, I had seen Man of Steel in 2013 when it came out, and I thought it was not good. And I think that was why I never saw Batman versus Superman, is because I just was like, I don't really care to see them fighting. I think that's stupid.
Batman versus Super Mid.
Well, I feel like they were just, what year was Civil War made? I feel like
16.
So it was the same year?
I think they're the same year.
Okay, I was gonna say, I feel like it's just a copy of Civil War where they're like, oh, we should have our two biggest heroes fight against each other, because that's so fun.
Batman versus Superman wasn't also trying to get into some of the politics, Civil War, it's a little weird sometimes. I feel like going back to that one now, it has not aged as well. I don't know. And also, it's just like that one too, it's like, is that a Captain America movie or just an Avengers movie?
That's
the question with that.
Captain
one.
America deserved a third movie for him. And this was just an Avengers movie. And it makes me so mad to this day that he did not get the movie he deserved. This should have been an Avengers movie, Avengers Civil War, and it still would have been a banger. But
yeah, they could have had five. Why not five Avengers? They could have just had five Avengers.
I know.
And then the Captain America movie could have been
him all the and stuff Bucky between Civil War.
Yeah, but the stuff between Civil War
going
and
on vacation,
Infinity War.
Maybe kissing a little bit.
Oh my God. Let's go into our topic here. We'll have a question that's kind of based around our conversation here at the end of this episode, and then if you want to answer that, we'll read that in our next episode. So stick around, listen for what the question is. Let's get into the history and the fun facts.
Yeah,
of
I've
Jennifer's
got
body.
A lot of great copy and paste from Wikipedia here for you.
I appreciate
try
the
to
copy
paraphrase
paste.
A little bit. As I did read, I read a lot more about it, but I just kind of copied and pasted a few things.
Okay. Yeah, we can just paraphrase.
So one thing that I thought we could share from the beginning is just two quotes from our two leads about this movie and being cast in these roles. Mm. So
can you talk like their voice when you read them?
Oh no. Wait, I don't remember how they sound. Megan Fox.
I don't remember either.
Okay. I feel like Megan Fox would be like, I think what I loved about the movie, because she has like a little bit of a deeper voice, I feel like. And she's
deeper
like,
and monotone.
I have a fairly monotone voice, like when I'm just talking.
But you're
but
higher, I think. You're a little bit more enthusiastic when you talk than she is, I think.
I think what I loved about the movie is it's so unapologetic and how completely inappropriate it is at all times. That was my favorite part about the script and about the character. It's fun to be able to say the shit that she got to say and get away with it, and how people find it charming.
Then MGK's in the back like, yeah, you get him,
yeah,
emo girl.
You go.
Yeah.
Yeah, my emo girl. Except he has a higher voice. He's probably like, my emo girl. Okay,
like a little gremlin.
A Amanda Seyfried. Seyfried, do you know how to say your name? Amanda Seyfried?
I think or is it Seyfried?
Seyfried? I don't know.
Talk like her in Mamma Mia.
Okay, so she is a higher voice, and she's kind of like being a lead, like Megan. You have that weird pressure of feeling like you have to look attractive. In this movie, I didn't worry about any of that shit. I don't want to play the one that everybody is supposed to want to have sex with.
I think when you said that, I would imagine her too using her hands a lot.
Yeah, you know, like her eyes, her voice
emoting
is like
with her eyes,
a nice,
leaning forward,
airy. Like she is a light voice.
Yes. Yes.
Yeah, I used to. You know what's so funny? I feel like I say this all the time with every actor. I used to be really hardcore against Amanda Seyfried as well.
Wow.
Because
that's a huge L.
Can you take
L
a guess why?
I don't know. Les Mis? I don't know.
She was good in Les Mis. If you think about another actor that I harbored a grudge against for a long
Channing
time,
Tatum?
They were in the same movie.
Oh, dear. Is she Dear John?
She is. She's opposite him in Dear John. And I harbored the same grudge against her.
It feels like with her, it might have just been like guilty by association.
Yes, it was less strong for sure. Like, I just kind of was like, I don't really like her the same way other people do. But now that I'm a big Mamma Mia guy, I like her. So, and I like her in, she's in that, Letters to Juliet rom-com. Have you seen that one?
No, but I know what you're talking about.
Okay, that one's a fun one. Yeah, anyway, so that's what they had to say about being in this movie. It seemed like they both enjoyed a lot of it, and Megan has even said that this is like her favorite movie she's ever been in her entire career.
Okay, I'm not spoiling our thoughts, but if I feel like if this is the favorite movie that you've been in, it's a little like... You might want to reassess your career.
Well, I feel like it was probably fun. And like, I think...
No, it's probably... Maybe it's her favorite experience, which makes sense.
Yeah, and we can get into some of this here. But I think this is one where it seemed like the crew and the directors, like, there was a level of sexualizing her. But it was more... It was with more care than I feel like when she was in, like, Transformers and stuff. She really just was used as her body. And so I think in this, like, it seems like she probably had a fun time and, like, a fun experience doing it.
Yeah.
I had to throw in here that Chad Michael Murray was considered to play the rock star character.
What?
Which is so crazy to me. And I couldn't even, I would have loved to see that. And unfortunately, we got gypped.
But I feel like he's just too nice, too. Like, I don't know if I want to see him play that guy.
Like, yeah, like, and obviously, like, with his character on One Tree Hill, which would have been, like, the height of his popularity at that time, it definitely, like, doesn't fit. So it's fine, but I would have loved to see it. So anyway, Jennifer's Body is a follow-up to writer and producer Diablo Cody and Jason Reitman's collaboration efforts on Juno. So I guess that this was kind of, like... Because
an interesting
it was written
pivot
by Cody
from Juno.
And Jason, like, produced it, and they had a relationship with Fox Atomic from that, and so they purchased the rights to the script with Megan Fox to star in from the beginning, and then Peter Rice, who was overseeing Fox Searchlight and Fox Atomic, was like, great, we produced Juno, we like you guys, so we're happy to do this movie as well. And it sounded like they all really just like wanted to do something different and fun and were kind of set on like not being the stereotypical movies in the industry at the time, which I think makes sense with this and Juno as well. So it's cool that they were able to do this and have the support behind it. So the director, Karin Kusama, said that one of her influences from, like, the 1980s horror genre, which you can tell that this is kind of going for that style, was The Lost Boys. Have you seen The Lost Boys?
No.
It's one spot. I haven't seen either, but I know.
Maybe we could do a we've never seen for the Lost Boys one time.
I know the general idea of it and kind Vampires of the vibe. Yeah. So she wanted to sort of honor that. And at the same time, she felt like she hadn't seen this subgenre done with girls. So she sort of wanted to kind of combine those influences, but it being like a female led film. And a lot of what she, when you read about sort of her perspective on the film, I do think it's really cool everything she tried to put into it to really say something about like feminism and women and their bodies and like puberty and sex and all that. So like if anyone is interested in that, there's some really interesting things that she said about sort of creating the movie and everything that was going into those topics within the genre, which is pretty cool. She seems like a dope person. So she wanted the film to speak to female empowerment and explore the complex relationships between best friends. Addressing the male-dominated horror genre, Cody, the writer, said a key reason for writing the film was to bring to the screen a new way of expressing the intensity of female bonds, and that the adolescent female friendships she experienced were unparalleled in their intensity. So that is interesting, too. So that was, like, the author of the screenplay, Cody Diablo Cody, who wrote it as well. She collaborated with Karin as well. And she said a lot of interesting things about writing the screenplay as well. So it's kind of cool that, like, a lot of the people involved and tied into this, like, seem to really care about a lot of those things. So in terms of the marketing, this is where the movie kind of ran into a few different issues. So a lot of the marketing was geared towards men, whereas Cody, the writer and the producer and the director all were like, this is a female-geared film. So, like, they talked about how this movie relates to puberty in that she's consuming the blood of others once a month, or she becomes weak and plain-looking when she's not consuming the blood. The nickname Needy was given to Amanda's character to basically, like, have their high school relationship and the dynamic of girl friendships. And so there was a lot of that stuff, and a lot of that was not included in the marketing. And the marketing was basically like, we want them to like look sexy and promote it as like Megan Fox being sexy so we can get guys to come to this movie. And then they also expected to benefit from a heavily marketed lesbian kissing scene. So they specifically like put that scene in marketing to sort of draw an audience. And there was a critic who said Jim Vivoda at IGN, he was like, basically like, what? Because he said a scene like that is not as shocking as it was in past decades. Right. So it can't really pull in an audience. So it's just kind of weird and gross that they did that. But it turned out that 51% of the audience was female. So I think they were pretty happy that they like were able to bring in a strong women audience to it. And 70% of the patrons were under age 25.
That tracks.
Film critic Roger Ebert enjoyed the film and called it Twilight for Boys.
Rare Ebert L.
Definitely an L.
What does that even mean? Twilight
for boys. The boys. Which, like, we've spent some time talking about that topic of, like, how a lot of studios don't think that women watch movies. And so for some reason, I don't know why, and they don't market things towards women. They market things towards men when they don't realize that, like,
towards the boys,
women drive the box office. We talked about this in our Titanic episode. We talked about it with Twilight when we both watched
Top Gun
and Top Gun Maverick was the sales. I know that there's those military bros who said, Yeah, I love Top Gun. So baller.
It's the only thing that made me join the military.
But
yeah.
the people I know who drove the sales for that movie were teenage girls. So just saying, Tom Cruise, shout out to the women for making this year successful movie. Anyway, so it earned only $2.8 million on its opening Friday night and $6.8 million its opening weekend in, this is in America. So it was produced for $16 million. Now, it placed number 5 that weekend. And I would like you to guess what the number one movie that beat Jennifer's Body was in 2009. It made $30.1 million. If I could guess, I would guess that we both saw this movie in theaters. We haven't ever talked about this movie, so I don't know if you saw it in theaters. But I know that I saw it in theaters, and it sounds like one that you probably, your mom probably would have taken you to see.
September 2009. I feel like I'm going to say something that didn't come out in 2009. That's like, when did that movie The Water Horse come out? Man, remember that movie?
I think that was like older. Really... I think that was early. I think that was early 2000s.
Well, like The Tale of Despero.
Great movie. Not the.
Okay. All right.
Water Horse came out in 2007.
Okay. 2009. This was the year Phantasm of Mr. Fox came out.
Well, it wasn't that one because
we definitely have talked about that movie quite a few times. Not Coraline.
It is an animated movie.
Yeah, that's what I was thinking, because if I had gone to see it, if we both would have seen it.
Tale of Despero came out in 2008, so you're close.
I'm closing in. Alvin and the Chipmunks: The Squeakquel.
Oh man, no.
Okay,
that's a great movie though. It is Cloudy with a Chance of Meatballs.
Yo, I have seen that movie in theaters. That is a great movie.
Yeah, so that was the number one movie that year. Or that Valid. Week that this That's also a,
that
came out.
That movie is so funny.
I don't know what the other three were, so I'm not sure. But yeah, Cloudy with a Chance of Meatballs beat Jennifer's Body at the box office. I thought that would be a fun thing to make you try to guess.
That's fun. Thank you.
Anyway, so yeah, like I said, it didn't do well then, but it did end up grossing 16 mil domestically and 15 mil international sales. So it did make a profit, which is good.
Yeah. And at this point it definitely has sales and streaming. It's a big movie
when it
now.
Was released on DVD and Blu-ray on December 29th, it opened at number 11 on the DVD sales chart, making $1.6 million in the first week, selling 104,000 DVD units. So it seemed like
it was...
They
put the Roger Ebert quote right on the front, like Twilight for boys. Right
so
on the top.
So it sounds like it definitely did well, I guess.
Yeah. And now it's like, I think, huge cult movie. At this point, they've made their return on investment for sure.
I had to throw in here that... it won the MTV Movie Award for Best Scared as Shit Performance for Amanda Seyfried. And then it was nominated, but did not win. I don't know what it lost to, but it was nominated for Best What the Fuck Moment for Megan Fox's Vomiting a Mysterious Black Ooze, which was chocolate syrup.
Wow. Great. Let's go to a quick ad break then. And then we come back, we'll dive into our thoughts on this cult film.
And we're back.
I have a little synopsis here. Shout out to the Macy twins. No clue who they are. If they're problematic, sorry. They're from IMDb. I don't know. I just pulled the synopsis. It looked pretty good. I made some slight alterations, but it's a pretty good synopsis. So I took it. I stole it. But I credited them, so I didn't. Do you want to read this one here? So anyone who is unaware of the plot of Jennifer's Body can get up to date, because it is a little different of a plot. So I feel like if people have an idea of what the movie is about, it would be good, probably.
Yes. Reserved bookworm Needy Lesnicki. And arrogant cheerleader Jennifer Check are best friends, though they share little in common. They share even less in common when Jennifer mysteriously gains an appetite for human blood after a disastrous fire at a local bar. As Needy's male classmates are steadily killed. Sorry, did you add that?
This is the Macy twins. I did not add the steadily.
Are steadily killed. And just is such a weird word.
It's a weird word.
For right there. As Needy's classmates are steadily killed in gruesome attacks, she must uncover the truth behind her friend's transformation and find a way to put a stop to the bloodthirsty rampage before it reaches her own boyfriend, Chip.
How many boyfriends have been named Chip in movies? We need to keep a tally. I feel like I see that name a lot pop up. Like, just,
does it?
I don't know. It just feels like a really lazy boyfriend name pick. You know, I like this guy, though. He is good in this movie. And I like that actor.
He's a vibe. I mean, like,
he is a huge vibe.
I feel like he's pretty standard. Like, there's some issues with him. Like, he's a standard teen boy. But I feel like, for the most part, like, I didn't really want him to die. Spoiler! Sorry, but
I mean, and he's been in, he was in 21 Jump Street. He was in Scott Pilgrim the year after this. Hotel for Dogs? Wow.
Wow! Oh my Whiplash. God! Hotel for Dogs is one that's on our childhood classics. And I think we just need to do that one ASAP, because I loved that movie as a kid.
I haven't seen that movie in a hot minute. I only saw it one time. Oh, he was in the Whiplash short film. Not the new one, but he was in the short film. Interesting. Anyway, we're not talking about him. Well, we are, but not fully. This will be full spoilers. This is a movie that came out 13 years ago. If you haven't seen this movie, you should go watch it, or not. I don't know. You might, or you probably just don't care. So I watched this a few days ago. Was definitely very in the mood for a horror movie, for sure. Like, it was a great time of year to be watching this movie. Really just excited to throw it on. And it's always fun to start, like, a new horror movie, you know? Like, in a very new genre. Because, like, maybe I'll put on Halloween 4, and I know, even though I've never seen it before, I kind of know, like, what I'm going to get. But this is, like, I went in, I really didn't know, like, what I was going to get. I knew the basic premise. I knew that she was going to kill people, Megan Fox. I didn't know Amanda Seyfried was in it, I don't think, though. But I knew, like, basically what I was getting into. But I was still excited. A lot of people have told me to watch this, like you said. A lot of people I know like this movie. And when I finished it, you know, I didn't, like, hate it. But I also was just a little underwhelmed. Like, I feel like that's the problem with cult movies sometimes, is that people hype them up a lot because they're just so into it, and they've seen it so many times and they know all the lines.
Sure.
And there's, like, these little details that they love. But I feel like when you watch a cult movie for the first time, it can be a little bit underwhelming, because it's like, I don't really see what everyone is seeing, because I'm not as familiar with the story, but I also don't know if I want to be, like, I don't really know if I'll ever really want to watch this again. So I don't know. We'll see.
Yeah, I definitely don't want to watch this again. Which is
not a big Jennifer's Body guy.
Unfortunately, no. Which is funny, because I feel like this is one that I should
it
like.
It should be a movie that you would like.
It should be a movie
and
that
me.
I would
I
like.
I feel like this should be a vibe for both of us.
Yeah, like, it fits other kind of movies in this style that we like. You know, we like those silly, you know, horror, comedy, dark, cult classic-y, like, queer movies. Like, this is definitely
feminism.
Like, we're big feminist
Twilight
guys.
For boys.
All about that. So I put this on today and I get a little bit into it, and I was like, you know, I'm not vibing, but maybe I just need to get further into it.
Yeah.
And then I was nearing the climax of the movie, and I just sat there thinking,
L climax, gotta say.
This can't be the same movie that everyone else loves. I feel bad. I do feel bad because
I understand. Yeah, I get it.
This is one I wanted to like, and I think there are a lot of people that I'm friends with that really like this movie, or this movie means a lot to them, and I think that's great. Mm-hmm. And so I wanted to partake in the bloodiness of it.
I wanted to partake in the blood of the lamb.
And I couldn't, unfortunately. This was not for me. I hate to report back to you that this was not a good movie. And if you want to turn off the podcast now,
hey,
I understand.
We'll try to back it up, though.
I do think there were a few things that were funny in it, and I think there are a few things that I can give props to and say, like, yeah, that was good. But I just think overall that this was not the movie for me to be watching on a Monday afternoon.
Yeah, I think some of those good things, like, I think the performances are pretty good, like, the main three. And then also, like, Chris Pratt just shows up randomly. That was why. He also shows up as, like, definitely the most Chris Pratt character of, like, all time as well, which is kind of, like, unintentional comedy now, I feel like. Like, that was really funny to me.
Yeah, it was a Chris Pratt jump scare. He's literally dressed as a Republican. He acts like a Republican.
He's a cop.
Yeah, he's a cop.
Trying to pass his test.
Yeah, and he definitely drops a slur. And I had to laugh because I was like,
there's Mario. Because
I know he's acting, but I was like, that word came off his tongue too loose for me to.
Oh my gosh. Yeah, I think the performances are pretty good, and they really help, I think, elevate the movie past, like, its cheesiness. Like, it is still very, like, over the top, but I think some of the performances is help kind of, like, legitimize it, especially Amanda Seyfried. Like, she's, I think, always pretty good in movies. So she has to do, like, a couple of different things here, mostly to, like, in the beginning scene and, like, establish that part of her character. So I think the performances are pretty good. Like you said, there was some funny stuff, some funny, like, regular high school drama things, and there was, like, individual moments that I liked, and, like, stuff. Like, I really liked this whole speech by the indie rock band, like, before they sacrificed her. I thought was really funny. I was like, do you know how hard it is to make it as an indie rock band these days? And they was like, do you want to live your whole life, like, doing this, or do you want to be, like, the guy of Maroon 5? I just thought that was really funny.
Which is funny. So funny, because Maroon 5 is, like, so not an indie rock band at all.
No, not anymore, at least. Yeah, but even then, like, 2009, they definitely... But those guys felt like they could be Maroon 5. Like, they were just very basic, the most basic band you could have thought of. But besides that, it's just, like, overall, I felt like the pacing was just really weird, and... It was a decent length movie, like, regular length, but I just felt like not much, like, really occurred. It was like she turned into the monster, and then, like, she killed a couple people, and then Dee Dee was like, you aren't gonna kill my boyfriend, and then she did kill the boyfriend, and then that was the end. Like, it was just like, okay.
I feel like not enough people died.
It needed to be more of, like, a build towards the climax, because I think the climax is also really lame, like, set in, like, a CGI filled, like, pool, which was just not the move. But it was just it was not built up enough. Like, the anticipation was not there for that final climax.
I think one of my main issues from the beginning is that it kind of jumps into, not that I needed this movie to be longer, but it jumps right into the action, and so I felt like there wasn't enough for me to establish even, like, Jennifer or Needy's character to be like, oh, I like these characters, or I'm familiar with these characters, or I understand their friendship. So it kind of was like, this happened and I didn't really care that it was happening because I didn't care about the characters, and I feel like that could have been established a little more from the beginning. But also, I just think in general, as the plot was happening, I just thought it was really boring and didn't really make any sense.
Well, there wasn't really any depth to... I don't want to sound, like, pretentious. I don't know. But, like, the characters weren't interesting enough for me to be interested in the story, is, like, a more straightforward way to put it. And Jennifer is not a very interesting main character. I really wish they had done more with her, their relationship, her and Needy's relationship. I thought that could have been way more explored and like maybe have her redeem herself a little bit at the end, because like she said, it's not really her that's trying to that's killing people. It's like the demon inside of her, you know?
Yeah.
So I think they could have done some stuff with that.
Well, because she didn't act any different. So like in the beginning and then in the like when you met her before, she literally acted the same. And so it was kind of like, oh, like was she a bad person in the beginning? Like,
yeah, I wish there was just like some redemption, maybe like sorry for the way I started treating you as high school got on, or but like they had a good relationship when they were growing up. I thought like that bond could have been bigger. So then it would have been like a more dramatic, a more emotional climax, because not only is her boyfriend dying, who also they didn't really establish, like I didn't really care about their relationship either, but also like her best friend is dying and maybe she has to like sacrifice herself or something to destroy the demon who like has been put in her by these losers, you know? Like I thought that it just, there was a good story in there that I wished I was watching.
If I could rewrite any movie
it would be Jennifer's body. No, it was just like there wasn't enough going on under the surface for me. It was just very like, this is happening. Okay, sounds good. More people are dying. The scene was kind of funny, but overall, I wasn't interested in it as it went on, I guess. I don't know.
Yeah, I think that's a fair assessment for sure.
I thought there was going to be an explanation for why there was a fire, because how did like that big of a fire start? Like I thought the rock band was going to have started the fire or something. And then also, why did she go in the van? Why was she acting so weird? Like, did they drug her? Like, why was she, Jennifer, acting so weird after the fire?
So I thought the fire was started by demonic forces. That was
my... Well, but
they
didn't say that, though.
No,
I was just like...
but because I was like, why is the fire starting? And then my brain was like, I guess the demons started the fire. Like, that was my brain's explanation
the demon
for it. Like,
started the
some
fire.
Some supernatural, because, like, they were going to summon this demon. I was like, maybe that's what started the fire. Maybe they started the fire. I don't know. Very confused about
the
whole fire in general. Really didn't make a lot of sense. And then, the van thing, I guess
was she in shock from the fire and she was
like,
just like,
I think it was more like, she was just doing it out of spite because Needy was like saying she shouldn't go. But again, I feel like their friendship just wasn't like established enough for that to like be clear. If that was the reason, like, I just don't think that was established for it to be like a clear reason. I have a lot of questions about the fire in general, but it didn't make sense to me.
There had to have been like some lighter fluid on the ground, because that thing like went up in a blaze immediately. Like it was like this little flame.
Well, I
and
guess maybe
later,
because
was, like,
of the
boom.
Alcohol, like maybe that's why it went up so fast. But I feel like in that case, like if it caught the bar on fire, would it not explode? Or would it?
I don't know. And also, you know how many like places catch on fire in America? There's no way this would have been like a national news story.
Yeah, I guess if that many people died, it would.
Or maybe the demon made it a national news story to make the singers popular.
One time when I was leaving a Starbucks, the TGI Fridays next to me in the parking lot was on fire.
I wonder if that was
Texas Roadhouse. Sorry, Texas Roadhouse was on fire.
Oh, Texas Roadhouse. Leatherface did it.
I he might have.
He might have. He's like from one weapon to another.
Yeah, I think another thing that I was like, I wish there would have been more school scenes. Because I think
more
like
set in the school
that kind
of
hit a sweet spot in the school. Like I loved the scenes with the teacher in the classroom. Mm-hmm. Like,
the teacher was so funny.
Like, because I feel like being set in a high school environment sort of like humanizes the characters a little bit more, because it gives you something to kind of latch onto in their environment and kind of the person they are. And so I think that like helped those scenes be more elevated for me. And then I didn't like the scenes as much that weren't like in the high school.
Yeah. And like you're saying, you wanted more character development. I think being in a high school can give character development easily, even if like they're not specifically talking about their relationship, just because it can it puts you in their shoes more, rather than if they're just some random place.
And I think when they're around their classmates, it establishes their characters better because you can see how they interact with other people too, or how they're treated by their peers.
Right. No, definitely. And also how they're perceived, which again, wasn't really like established. Like, I guess you can assume from their personas and like the way they look and act, like you can assume their social status in high school, but it's not really like established at all, like where they are on like the social hierarchy of the high school, you know. It's just kind of like we have to assume it, which I guess is a way to cut down the movie, but again, it just felt like you said you're kind of thrown into the story very quickly.
Also, like, sorry, how are they at a bar or a club?
I mean, a pretty small bar. Maybe they just got let in. Maybe Chris Pratt let them in.
But she got drinks.
No, well, she said that she was like gonna like unzip her shirt or something, I think.
Oh,
that she did
okay.
say about getting the drinks. Maybe they said that to get into the bar too. I think the ending, not in the pool, but I like her going to like her room and stabbing her and having to like go to, I thought that was like a cool ending. And also the reveal that she got some of the demon's powers, and then they showed that she was elevating. And great end credits. I love a good end credits that kind of like progresses, shows like the last part of the story a little bit. I thought that was a really fun way to do it.
Yeah, I think if I could pick a couple things that I liked about this before I say anything else too terrible about it, I do think that the way that they like tried to use and incorporate practical effects in this was really cool. I read a lot about as well how they incorporated like trying to start everything with a base of a practical effect before adding any kind of CGI. And I thought that that was a cool way to sort of, if their inspiration is those kind of 80s horror movies, that really fits with that style. And I think they achieved that. I think that the look of this film, I think that like the overall vibe of it, and also like all the effects and stuff definitely hits those things. And like, I think that's cool. And then I did like you said, the scene where they sort of like gave the monologue was funny, but I also thought that scene was like kind of cool and interesting because they kind of did that like shot thing when they started like killing her while they're singing the song. Like, I thought that that was like interesting and creative and was one of the moments in the movie that I kind of was like, oh, okay.
Cool.
Like, cool.
Whoa.
Yeah, and so I think those were two things that I liked about it, for sure. I thought the costuming was really good. Just all those kind of little things. My main issue is the story. I think all those little things I like, but then once you add the story into it and the characters and everything else, I'm like, this is where you lose me. Sorry.
This feels a little underbaked, I think, was like the main thing. Like, it seemed like they had the idea. It feels like they need to stitch it together a little more. The last thing I wanted to talk about, like, is this a horror movie or no? Like, what would we say this is? Because it's not, I feel like it's not very scary. It's more, is this like a comedy? Is a horror comedy? Is it a teen comedy? Teen horror comedy? I don't know. It's like a really weird thing to fit in a category.
Yeah, I mean, I haven't seen The Lost Boys. But I feel like...
Remember that Lost Boy song?
You remember...
Like, I am a lost boy from Neverland.
I do remember that song.
Peter Pan.
I had another movie in my brain and it left my
lost
brain.
Lost Boys.
Oh, I was thinking What We Do in the Shadows as well.
Oh, yeah.
I feel like there's this...
Horror comedy.
Yeah, like kind of a movie that's... in horror genre that you watch in spooky season and has spooky elements like vampires, demons, ghosts, like those kind of things, but doesn't quite, like, it's in its own subgenre of like dark comedy sort of, I don't know, like that was kind of,
I feel like this would pair good with Heather's, you know.
Yeah, I
Heather's first and
yeah
then this.
That, yeah.
Actually, maybe Heather's second, because after you watch Heather's, I feel like this would be a really big downgrade.
Sure.
So I would probably do this, then Heather's.
Yeah, that would be a great double feature. Yeah.
We'll do it. Let's program it right now. I just watched Shaun of the Dead, too, and I think that is a similar like vibe.
Yeah,
like
it's something that
has those elements.
I think it's perfect for people who want to watch something maybe in October that is spookier or on the spookier side, right. But maybe they just want to dip their toes in. Because I do think there are maybe some elements in this that are a little bit more spooky for someone who wants to only watch, you know, something marginally spooky. But I think that this is a good, like, entryway to...
good for the family movie.
Yeah,
you know,
so good for the family. Wholesome content. Should play this on Hallmark Channel. I think that this would be a great TV Land special movie. I guess...
horror comedy.
It is a cult classic.
Yeah.
How do you feel about that?
The fact that it's a cult classic?
Do you feel like it should be? Or do you feel like it...
I feel like I can't... I don't really have a say. I don't really care. Like, if people think... It feels like a cult movie. Because, like, it feels like a movie that's... You could make a case for why it's good, I guess. Like, if you wanted to, like, put a bunch of pieces together. Be like, this is the reason this is actually a masterpiece. Which I've done with movies before. I feel like you could do that with this. I just don't think this is the movie that I would go to bat for, cult status wise. Like, but I can see why it feels like a cult movie.
I think this is like one of those ones that you're like, it makes sense why it's a cult movie, but it doesn't make sense why people say that it's good.
Yeah, because like, I mean, it had the scenes like the fire on the tongue is like a really big scene.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you see that still. You've got, like, the... It just has all some specific scenes that was, like, this really feels like a cult movie. Like, all this wacky shit that's going on.
Yeah, like it's just... totally makes sense to me that this is has its cult status that it does.
Megan Fox.
But then when I look at the Letterboxd ratings, and, like, half the people I follow give this 4, 4.5, 5 stars, I'm like, really? Like, that is where...
Are we sure about that, guys? Should we reassess?
I'm trying to think of a movie that I like, though, that I can make a joke about that's, like, a terrible movie, but a cult classic.
Spooky Buddies.
I was gonna say Spooky Buddies. I said that's not actually a cult classic. Like, I was gonna say, unlike cult classic, blah, 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 that people think is bad, but is actually, like, iconic.
I mean, I don't really know, like... I feel like I don't usually like cult classics because I never really watched them maybe before they were... I feel like if you really want to like a cult classic, you have to have watched it really before, like been on the ground floor usually. I don't know.
Like when it comes out? Like you're
like, I just
an
feel
OG?
Like I've never been like come to a movie as it's becoming a cult classic or whatever. Like it's always like presented to you usually as
you
like
know,
this is like
you know though,
a classic.
I feel like we're in the Shrek era though.
Yeah, but Shrek,
like,
I never really liked Shrek. Like, I like Shrek.
Okay,
but it's
I
like,
loved Shrek as a kid. But, like, I feel like that's one that, like, we were on the ground floor for.
But Shrek like, was nominated for an Academy Award.
Oh, damn, it was. You're right.
I just feel like Shrek was already people liked.
Okay, that's a good point. That's a good point.
The Cars cult classic era.
Cars? Pixar's
Cars? Cars 1. Yeah, Cars 1.
Oh, wouldn't be a cult classic.
Well, it wasn't. I feel like it didn't get great reviews. I don't know. I just feel like maybe we gotta wait a couple of years for there to be like a true cult classic from our era.
What do you think is gonna be the cult classic?
Man.
Like out of recent movies.
I feel like there'll be one of like the Steven Soderbergh movies.
Okay.
That he releases every like probably like 10 years, 15 years. People are like, this was a masterpiece.
Logan Lucky,
no one...
masterpiece.
I feel like Logan Lucky's getting to that point. That's like in the mid stage right now. Cause I feel like it didn't get a lot of, like it didn't really do well at box office. And I see people that say they like it, but I think it's still not very well known. I think that could definitely keep rising. Cause Daniel Craig is just
an icon.
Still very popular.
Yeah.
And it's very similar to his Knives Out role, like doing some comedy, some Southern drawl. So yeah, maybe we'll see Logan Lucky popping up a little bit.
Interesting.
Who knows?
You
who knows?
Heard it here, folks. Heard it here first.
I also think we need to stop this episode. I also think, though, people are a little too self-aware right now, and they are I feel like they're trying to make cult classics sometimes. And there's more niches now where before it was like you really only had movies that went to the theater that you saw, and those were the ones that, like, I don't know. It just feels like there's too many. There's a lot more movies now, and there's a lot more people that are aware of the niches they're trying to fill. So
you
it's
know
harder,
a movie
I think
could be
a cult
classic that I don't think should be, because I think it's an absolute shit show of a movie and one of the worst things I've seen in the past 24 years of my life. Barb and Star. Awful movie.
I feel like that's another movie that people were trying to make a cult movie like the minute it came out.
I do
which,
agree.
Like, that's
I
not
do
how
agree.
It really works.
I do agree with that. But I do think like that's the kind of movie that I think 10 years from now people are going to be like, oh my gosh, Barb and Star. Yeah, but I hate that movie. I wish I could unwatch it. I wish I could remove it from my brain.
Remove it from your hard drive.
But I guess should our question then be what current movie do you think is going to become a cult classic?
Yeah, what do you think will be the next big cult classic or something? Yeah.
Yeah, but it's we'll say one that's come out like within the last, I feel like it needs to be within the last decade. Like one that,
yeah,
even more recent. Like maybe the last, I feel like decade's fine, because that would put us at 20, fine. What? Oh my gosh, I almost said 2014.
No, 2012. Yeah, what is a movie released within the last decade that will be a cult classic? I think that is a good question. Really get the brain started. I'll definitely be thinking about that. I'm sure I'll think of a great idea 10 minutes after we stop recording this. And that's usually how
we'll
it works.
Write it down for our next episode.
Right. If you want to answer that question, you can reach out to us on Twitter, Instagram, Facebook. You'd answer it on Spotify. There's a feature. Email us. Get it on our website. There is a ton of ways. And then in our next episode, we will read that question or the answers to that question. And so we have, again, one more episode coming out on Thursday. That is the final episode of our Lost Weekend series interview with Andy Geyerson, who we interviewed previously before we started the Lost Weekend episode. So a nice little end cap to that series. And then on Tuesday, we'll be back with our regularly scheduled content in a very exciting episode that I am excited to record. I don't know about you.
Yes, I'm also excited to record the episode.
Do you want to tell our audience what it is?
Yes, I would love to. For the first time ever, we're talking about a movie. It is the first time ever, right? We're just talking about a movie
probably
that has been out for a while. Not in any sort of series. It's just one we want to talk about.
Yeah. We've seen it. It's not a childhood classic.
It's not a cinema swap. It's not in any triple feature. It's just a movie that we love, that we want to share our thoughts about, which is When Harry Met Sally.
It's the perfect time of year for it. The leaves are changing, have changed, falling, depending on where you are in the world.
Yeah, and we're in the holiday season where, like, you know, I feel like once you hit the holidays, we're about to get into Christmas, and I feel like this is the perfect time to watch it, because even though, like, it has Christmas and, like, ish time, New Year's.
Yeah, it has,
like,
all the seasons.
But I feel like it also has some great autumn scenes, and this is the perfect time of year for it, where you can get some
November tea,
some cider, some hot chocolate, your favorite selected hot beverage for an evening. Sit down and watch it with a cozy blanket, cozy sweater. Maybe you got some popcorn. Maybe you got some Chex Mix. And you say, time to watch the greatest movie ever made.
Truly. I'm excited. I just recently watched it, and I will be watching it again.
I literally just recently watched it.
I just rewatched it so recently. I think this will be the third time I've seen it this year.
Third time seeing it this year, too.
Sometimes every time I watch this movie, after I watch it, like 2 days after, I'm like, man, I should watch that again. It's just
and probably
one of those.
Not. It's probably not the last time we'll watch it this year either.
who can say? Only time will tell. So tune in on Tuesday for that exciting entry into no series. Just maybe that should be a series we do. Just like just for fun series.
Make it a series. Movies that don't fit into any series that we want to talk about.
Miscellaneous. All right. Well, thank you all for listening. And until next time, I'm Noah.
And I'm Kayla, your resident ghosty guy. And we're
your
second
hand film critic.